First of all, you don't know me.
We're all about that high school drama girl, all about them high school queens.
Always and forever.
We'll take you for a ride in our comic girl,
drama girl,
cheering for the right team.
Drama queens,
you could
drama
be queens. Smart girl, rough girl, fashion, but you're tough girl. You could sit with us, girl.
Drama queens, drama queens, drama queens. Drama queens, drama queens.
You guys, we just finished watching episode 2, Places We Have Come to Fear the Most.
I didn't expect to be affected, friends.
We all cried at the end.
I know. You were saying like during the Zoom, I mean, when we were just watching the episode, Hillary, you were saying that you're really realizing what it is that was capturing people's hearts. Because, you know, at the time when we were on the show, it's harder to see because it's all mixed in with everything that we're experiencing behind the scenes too. So to just watch it back kind of pure with fresh eyes is I'm getting it too. I'm starting to really get it.
Yeah. And when you see it put together, you know, edited just right and the music is just right and it ends on that beautiful Gavin DeGraw song that's so emotional, and then Lucas turns and looks at Peyton and says, "Your art matters." Believe me, I don't know what's happening again. It's so
guys,
emotional.
We all three choked up. Who admitted it first?
It's what got
me. Who said
me
it first?
I did.
Yeah.
I'm such a crier.
I'm the last one to admit it.
Wow, I feel crazy. I'm crying.
But it was such a, you know, that's what was great about this show is that, like we were saying before, where everything now in this genre is really heightened and high stakes and like that Riverdale Vampire Diaries, like sort of high concept stuff, the superheroes and all that, which is so great. I love those shows. But
yeah, it's fun.
What we don't have a lot of right now is just teenagers with an attention span that can like sit and watch. I guess maybe that's what it is. I don't know if it's lack of content or if it's just the fact that the world has changed, but it seems harder to sell this kind of a show now than it did then. But back then, like all you needed was the very genuine, real emotion of the human experience and something that simple of the struggle of somebody wanting answers. And how they built it up the whole episode until the end, when it's just one small vulnerable moment and he just says that one thing to you, your art matters. It's what got me here. He didn't have to say that, but it was vulnerable. And it's exactly what every teenage girl wants a cute boy to turn and say something vulnerable and meaningful to her. I mean, immediately I was like 16 again, like, oh my God, I just want that.
Well, and I think what's really interesting is that in a way that never goes away, right?
Yeah. You
know, we grow up and then we realize inside of us are still scared kids.
Everyone's Is that why got, people like this show?
I think so, maybe. Because one thing I will say is I get what you mean. Like these high concept shows have really evolved now, but people are still watching our show.
Yeah.
And I think it's because at the root of it, it gave a bunch of people permission to be scared, to be vulnerable, to be complex, to feel feelings. And like, no matter in what ways they might've been succeeding or how good their lives were at home, or perhaps how rough their lives were at home, they had a place to come and feel vulnerable and feel like they could take risks. You know, it's a risk to turn around and look at the girl at the basketball game and say that to her when her boyfriend is standing over there. But we took these risks to be seen on screen. And I think so many people crave that now.
It's such a teeny tiny moment. And I honestly, like, that line is the line that fans say to me more than any other line. And it is ingrained in, I have it embroidered from a fan, like hanging up on a wall in my house. And it's to watch it back, because I haven't seen it since it aired, is so weird because it's such a small moment and it made such a big impact. And like, I'm coming off of a weird weekend. I literally just drove through my hometown and hung out with some friends from high school and shared all these like vulnerable things with them that I didn't have the moxie or confidence to tell them when we were 17 in real life. So to watch these 17-year-olds on TV, I mean, it could be us playing these people or like total strangers, but just to watch these 17-year-olds on TV like say things that are earnest.
It's everything you want to have the guts to say when you're that age, but it's just so hard.
yeah. it's shocking to watch.
Yeah. The fear of rejection.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in that moment on the court, did it feel like a big, did you feel it in that moment, how powerful that was, or only within the storytelling that we're watching back?
I think I was so scared of the process of filmmaking while we were mm-hmm. doing it mm-hmm. that everything to me was like, how do I hit my mark? How do mm-hmm. I find lens? How do I like do all these things? And I joke all the time about how at the time, like Chad, I was so mean to Chad when we first started shooting the show. I was just like, don't even look at me. You're just a dumb boy, whatever. Because I was such a snarky little brat. And so watching it, I have this joke where I'm like, I believe in the power of the edit, right? Where you can like do a totally dorky scene, but when they lay some good music on it, mm-hmm. I mean, you know what mm-hmm. I mean. When
oh,
they
yeah.
piece mm-hmm. it together, the end of that episode, I believe in the power of that edit. They did a really solid job yeah. making that feel like a punch in the gut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you watch it, you get the narrative of the edit. You get the melody of the episode. And when we're doing it, you know, we're in the gym for 18 hours that day. Mm-hmm. You're not conscious of it. And it's funny, you know, Joy, you were saying something earlier when we were watching about how it's a blur for us because we did it for so long and it was yeah. so many years. And I did something, and I don't know if I told you guys this, and this was just an averaging, but I went through and looked at, you know, some timesheets and was like, okay, so if I wanted to make an average of how many hours we shot every episode and then what that means over 187 episodes, mm-hmm. it means that from you guys starting the pilot to us finishing episode 187, we filmed this show, the conservative estimate is 35,000 hours of our lives.
What?
So that's why we don't remember anything, you guys.
Yeah. Like,
so the cool thing
she's
is,
she's good at math. She's really good at math.
I
love
really
that
like
as a
math.
Hobby, you just sat down and did that. So
I crunched. I got the graph paper out.
Yeah, no, like this is the way in which I'm like, this is why when people ask me if Brooke Davis and I are similar, I'm like, so in some ways we became similar, and in many ways not at all. I love math, and I needed like a data point to understand why I couldn't always remember things that fans were asking. And I'm actually so excited to be here, A, because we get to do this every week and I get to be with two of my favorite women, and B, because now we're going to get to experience what they did, because at the time we never did.
Yeah.
Even if we saw an episode, even if there was like a big something, we had a watch party, we were still filming thousands of hours a year.
Yeah.
And so now we're just going to like watch the show and just see the edits.
Did we ever have a watch party? The only watch party I remember is Honey Grove, Texas, where we sat down with some fans and watched the show. Oh. But did we ever?
I remember one in somewhere in Landfall Center. I think there was some bar maybe that people met up in to watch a finale.
Yeah, a finale or something.
Yeah, I think it was near the movie theater. I can't remember. But
yeah, one of those sports bars.
Rarely.
What was that?
I don't know.
See, this I won't remember, but
rarely we did that. But wait, yeah. Let's talk about something that we have to address, which is okay. the introduction of Brooke Davis.
Woo! Oh, hi.
She came in cute with that little flippy hairdo.
Oh, yeah. My
God. Wasn't it the Rachel? It was like the grown out Rachel.
Ugh, that yeah. hair.
So
I look
cute.
Back at it and I'm just like, wow, I just didn't really know. The hair was so, it was, I actually sort of find it charming because it is very innocent and sweet.
Yeah.
And, but then the thing that is so traumatic for me is that I'd plucked out half of my eyebrows. Like,
so you talk about this. Oof. I love it. I love the skinny 90s brows. I
oh,
think
man.
That there's, girl, I'm telling you.
I think it's very flattering, but also like, I'm Italian. I can't get rid of these. By the way, I'm so lucky. Because they grew back when I stopped plucking them out. And I'm very thankful to my mother
yeah,
and her
mine
mother
did
for
not.
That. Your
some
eyebrows
fucking
are great.
Rubbing castor oil on my eyebrows.
So I remember when you showed up, I thought you looked like Janine Turner. Is that who I'm thinking of?
Wait, from Urban like, Exposure?
Yes. Yes, because she had that cute mole, and you have a cute mole. Oh, yeah. And I was like, and also just that kind of like sultry, like raise one eyebrow, give you that like side eye look. And I was like, oh, she's got that thing. Mm-hmm. That thing. And Sherilyn Fenn has it too.
Yes.
You know?
Wow.
Like you embodied those women who just kind of had like a little bit of mystery to them. And it was such a good introduction to Brooke Davis because she does. She gives like such good cheerleading side eye.
Oh, yeah. Man.
You were also exactly what the energy that the show needed. I mean, they introduced Jake with the boys and you with the girls on the girls team. And it was like everybody got a little. We'll talk more about Jake in a minute. But I loved what the energy that you brought. It was like just bubbly and fun. But there was a depth there, which we saw when you were talking about your future and, you know, your fear. And we were saying when we were watching it, we were talking with each other and saying that that line about, you know, here's what's going to happen unless I get fat. And it's like, I can see how so many girls who went into audition would have read that as like a funny line. But you know, fam, like talk about why you knew how to nail that line.
Yeah, gosh, I think because, and we talked about this a little bit when we first got together to talk about this. There was so much about Brooke I didn't understand and that I couldn't relate to. And I was so scared to admit I didn't know. So I like was desperately trying to figure it out. And so the sultry cheerleader, I was like, side eye. I was like, that's what they do. Like I'd never held a pair of pom poms, you know? And the interesting thing for me was those were the things I had to find in her, and like her boldness and her very overt sort of sexiness and stuff made me scared. But the fear I could understand because I was afraid. And then that fear in particular, I really understood because I'd seen girls who were in families like that, families that said, you've got to do this job or you've got to be in this pageant or you need to do this and don't you ever gain an ounce because then you'll never get a man and you'll... And I watched girls wither under that. I had a friend in high school who had to go to rehab for an eating disorder because she grew up in a family like that. And it was heartbreaking and scary as a teenager to see a friend go to the hospital, you know? And so for me, that line, to not play it as a joke, to play it as a deep-seated fear, felt really... honest for things I'd seen before.
That made all the difference with your character. Right?
Well, did they ever talk to you about the trajectory of Brooke? Like,
no.
Did you know that down the road, Brooke Davis would become like the voice of reason?
No.
You know?
No. I mean, my God, I thought in the beginning, and you know, we'll get to it in the next episodes, but if our OG fans are here, they've seen them before. like, you know, I thought that the stunt in the backseat of the car, which I think might be in the episode after this, was like a one-time thing, was a stunt. I didn't know that, you know, they were really going to try to push me to behave that way, to be this like outlandish girl. And now it's funny because at the time I was like, this is ridiculous and high school girls aren't promiscuous like this. And now I'm like, who am I to call any woman promiscuous? Rude. But I, you know, at the time I just was like, I don't know. And you know, years into the show, I think they were just like, we're so sick of fighting with you that we're just going to start to make her more like you.
Yeah.
Which was fun. I won. And then there were like ways I got to be so bold, like later down the line, you know, when I trashed that cafe across from Karen's, like, I would never do that. But God, don't you just fantasize about like walking in a room and just shoving everything off a table? Like, she felt so free to me in ways that I never did. But yeah, I had no idea what she was going to be. All they said to me was, you know, we've got this show and it's so good. And everyone's dealing with sadness and we need somebody who's really happy and likes to mix it up. And I thought when I read that line about I'll be, you know, successful and get everything I ever want unless I get fat, I thought, oh, that's the hint. That's a hint for who she really is.
Yeah.
Didn't you guys grow up hearing, like, I'm going to go to college and get my MRS?
I knew girls who grew up in the South who said that.
I don't know what an MRS is. I'm sorry.
Your missus. That's your degree. You're going to go to college to find a husband.
Whoever you're dating your senior year in college.
Oh, that's such a Southern thing to say.
Yeah. I mean, where I grew up, it was like, oh, yeah, I'm going here to get my MRS. You know, all the engineers go to this school. All the architects go to this school. All the lawyers mm-hmm. go to this school.
Yeah, that's a very Southern. And well, I guess like upper echelon East Coast, too. But I don't know that they'd say it that way.
I mean, the rednecks still say it, Joy.
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, I was lived in Dallas till I was 12. I should know.
That's how you get out of that lower system. You're like, I'm gonna go get my MRS. She got into the state school. She's gonna do well. You know.
That's funny. Think about the trajectory that Brooke took, though. That's so interesting that you would start in that place of genuinely feel like just being like all those other, you know, the example of all those other type of girls that you are just mm-hmm. talking about, which I hate saying anyway, type of anything, like just the generalization. Everyone's obviously got all their own individual struggles, but there is some sort of collective community similarity in that way that she would have come from. And to see her go from that to the incredibly empowered woman that she became. I mean, that's such an interesting and heroic journey. I loved that.
I did too. And I loved that she made it feel possible for so many people. And I loved that she always found it with women. So many girls are raised to seek validation from men. You know, and I even think back to all of us being kids and, you know, trying to figure it out and be in relationships while we were there. And that's how you think you're a grown up. But really, you grow up, really, you find your people in the women in your lives, first and foremost. And, you know, we've all been together for a hell of a lot longer than most of us have been with anybody else. You know what I mean?
It's true. We've been in love longer than I've been in my marriage.
Exactly. And so then I was like, wait, how long is it? 12 years? I was like trying to do the math real quick in my head. I need to write it down when I do it. But I thought that was so special. Like even you talking about her trajectory, you know, Brooke launched her business living with Haley. Brooke made decisions about her future with Peyton. Like I loved being able to, despite so many ways in which like a group of old men writing for us made us say shit that teenage girls would never say. Your porn name? Come on. We would never.
Yeah, the porn name. As long as we're addressing it, names?
Yeah, yeah. wait. Oh, no. Wait,
it's your first pet and your mother's maiden name?
My first pet was Shepherd and my mom's maiden name is... Well, I can't tell people my mother's maiden name. That's like questions that the Social Security office calls and asks you.
Wait, then what are our characters' mother's maiden names? Do we know that?
Well, then I just said mine, so you guys go.
Oh, yeah.
Mine's Bunny Burgard.
Well,
do you know Ellie's maiden name? I don't know Victoria.
Ellie Harp. It was Harp.
Oh.
I don't think Peyton had a pet. I had a dog named Misty.
I feel like she would have had a
lizard. Harp?
Misty Harp.
Misty Harp definitely got her MRS.
Yeah, she
to
got
any
her.
Misty Harps out there, I'm so sorry. I just want to fully disclose Misty that was just Harp. A joke. Gosh, I don't know that Victoria had a maiden name that I was aware of. Mm-hmm. But our first dog's name was Bouncer because my mom used to joke that he was her bodyguard. So Bouncer Davis is kind of... hideous when you think about it in terms
of
porn.
It's a visual.
It's a visual. I just see boobs everywhere.
But totally not something that a teenage girl would talk about, by the way.
Joy, you handled the naughty talk, baby. You handled
it. Here's why I had to.
Oh my gosh, wait. Guys, we have a producer. It's Victoria Montgomery. See, this is why we have people helping us make this show, because they know the things we don't. So Bouncer Montgomery is even worse.
Bouncer Montgomery.
Oh my God.
Sounds like an old, like, Southern Gothic,
oh my
like,
God.
William Faulkner character.
Bouncer Montgomery.
No, But go back, yeah, go back, because you're right. You nailed it.
The reason why I had to was, I mean, it's definitely something that I would have said something about, like, I don't want to, you know, why are we talking about this? It's not something teenage girls would talk about. And I was also really conservative and at the time and just very, you know, I was kind of uncomfortable at the time.
We'll talk more later.
Disclaimer.
We'll talk more about where you are now after the show.
But when I joined the show, I was told in no uncertain terms, this show is about f***ing and sucking.
Oh my God, I can't believe they said that to you.
That's what, like, I was told.
I just almost spit
That's
LaCroix out of my nose.
I got.
What?
It
Who
was like,
said
so
to you?
If she's going to be prude, she can't be on this show. Mm-hmm. And it was just so outrageous. So anyway, so I knew that, you know, like I was going to have to like, I knew my character, so I wasn't concerned that my character was like going to go in a direction that I would have felt compromised in or whatever. So I was like,
you
okay,
didn't
whatever.
Think you were going to wind up naked in a backseat?
Yeah. I didn't.
Like if it was on Tibet's right.
Oh,
I'm going to sing you a song.
Yeah. So when that line showed up in the script, I was like, okay, I'm just going to, pardon the pun, I'm going to suck it up. And,
Oh my God.
It writes itself.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that's where that came from. Anyway.
But by the way, two episodes in a row now, Haley's making comparisons to Dawson and Joey.
Yeah.
Because you say it's Dawson's freak. Like, did you think that Haley and Lucas were hooking up in the show? I did. I thought for sure.
Oh, same.
Were. Yeah. I think that's what they were originally going for. But Chad and I had no chemistry. So it just didn't work.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of felt that way with James because when I met James on the pilot, like we went out with our parents, you know, and like we were buddies. And I also was like such a prude that I hadn't like really kissed that many people in real life. So, you know, kissing James on the show was like weird.
And that was hot and heavy in the backseat.
Yeah, well, you guys had to like, go at it in that
no,
car.
No, they shot that scene multiple times because they realized that like neither one of us had ever kissed on television before. Right?
Right.
So, which means like neither one of us had
been
being directed. The very first scene that you ever have to like hook up is the weirdest thing ever because it's not real. So you're like, oh no, tongue, no tongue. Is this a right. conversation we need to have? Hands, where do those go?
And you're a teenager. You're so awkward talking about your body or kissing anybody in the first place.
And I was 21 and James was 17 and there was a legality thing in the back of my mind where I'm like,
God,
am I going to prison? Like, what's happening?
Man.
So there was just so much going on and there's 40 people standing around and you're shooting it at 4 o'clock in the morning and everybody just wants to go home and you're like, God damn it, just kiss me the way we're supposed to kiss. And like, I don't know what to do. And you're supposed to know what to do. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, they're like, run your hand up her leg. And he's probably like, is this okay? Can I do? I don't
know. Joy, they did a whole series of inserts of just his hands on different body parts of mine.
Ugh.
And I'm just thinking like, did I put lotion on? Did I shave?
Did I shave?
Like, yeah. Are we supposed to shave from the knee up now? Because I've been one of those girls where like, you were a slut if you shaved from the knee up, you know? And I don't think it was till I joined the show that I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I should do that. when they start doing insert work on your thigh.
Oh, like, my God.
Yeah, it was just that was so traumatic. And, oh, my God, I didn't think about this till just now.
What?
You know what made me realize that James was like a child is that we did this, like, a whole take of kissing, and it went on and on and on and on. And I'm like, somebody yell cut. This is so uncomfortable. And finally, they yell, cut. And James goes, sorg. And I was like,
what is that?
I said, sorg.
I remember this.
What is sorg? And he goes, it's gross, backwards. And I
you made t-shirts, Hillary.
I did. Because I was you like, made oh sorg my God, shirts. I'm talking to a teenager. Right
He's a literal teenager.
Sorg.
Sorg.
Yeah.
Sorg. Kissing you is sorg.
Kissing you so sorg right now. Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was gross, guys. Sorry.
Oh my God. That's so funny.
Oh my God.
I was jealous because I was like, all of Joy's kisses with James seem really like passionate and really like gentle and loving. And James and I, like, we were like two cobras just biting each other.
Yeah. it really captured the teenage hormones, like attacking each other. Is this how we do it? Just smash your face against mine. Come on.
Yeah, let's headbutt each other. Chip our teeth.
Yeah.
But interestingly, it feels so authentic.
Oh, for sure.
Like, so much of what was so special about the show is how authentic things felt and how honest they were and like unpolished.
Who was your first kiss in real life?
Sophia, go.
No, you go.
Okay.
Oh my God, I'm red.
I mean, I had like a, there was like a summer camp kiss with this really tall, green-eyed Spanish boy.
Who was
very tall and chubby and just super like a big, like a linebacker. And he kissed me out on the ropes course at summer camp. But there was no tongue. There was no tongue. It was just lips. And I wrote that in my diary. It was a smooch, but it was like slow and sweet. But then my French kiss, my first French kiss was this boy, and we were in his basement and he kissed me, but he licked all the outside of my mouth. I guess neither of us knew what we were doing, but I definitely knew. I was like, I feel like this is not the way it's supposed to be done.
No. Isn't it nice that there's not video evidence of that?
Oh, thank you, Lord.
Oh, man. Oh, no. I will say, and I will never tell you who, but I had one of the most aggressive and inappropriate kisses I've ever had on camera on our show.
What? Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what it is.
Yep.
I feel like, Joy, I've told you this, but
this sounds kind of familiar.
I will never reveal to the audience, but I was bitten by someone.
Oh, that's right.
Uh-huh. On our show. And when I said,
watch
what?
For it the whole time now.
I don't think that take made it because I hit him. I mean, I didn't like hit him in the face. I just like shoved him back because it really hurt. And I said, what are you doing? And he goes, I'm being sexy. And I was like, it's not sexy.
You're like, I'm biting.
There has to be like somewhere there's probably that in an outtake. And for his sake, I hope it doesn't come out because like I don't want to ruin his future prospects. But oh, man, I was like, you need to talk to someone about this and don't bite my face again, sir.
Sexual activity is such a luck of the draw thing as you grow up in life, like who you end up being able to kiss.
Learn from.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes a big difference.
Hillary, who'd you kiss for the first time?
Well, my first like prude kiss, no tongue kiss. That's the differentiation. Tongue, no tongue.
Yeah, exactly. Tongue, no tongue.
First no tongue kiss. I'm doing the Music Man in fifth grade, and there's a sixth grade boy who has really good hair and is a very good dresser. Oh. And
In the play with you?
Totally in the play with me.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And is such a babe, and we get along, and we like all the same things. And so I Google him as an adult, and he is a hairdresser and a flight attendant now, and he definitely is gay, and I feel so like flattered that he thought I was worth kissing in my super awkward years. Like it was one of those things where I was like, oh my God, of course. Like, yes.
Right. Our
energies were very, but also that's been a common theme in my life ever since, you know? And then tongue kiss was, I had started dating a really bad boy in high school, like a bad boy.
Oh.
And I was not a bad girl. And he, I guess, had like the chick he dated before me, like had a kid and stuff. Like he was definitely sexually active. And I wouldn't kiss him for like 8 months. Like I was
eight
like,
months? You wouldn't kiss him?
8 months.
No, I'd like peck him. But I was like, if you put your tongue in my mouth, I'm a whore. Like that's it. It's over. And so finally, homecoming night, we went to homecoming. We come home. He's dropping me off. I finally like lean over and he puts his tongue in my mouth. And it's like, he's very experienced and he's a very good kisser. And all of a sudden, the brights of my dad's truck flip on behind us.
No,
and I'm just like,
God. Of course.
It was like a sitcom. I'm just like, thanks, Dad. I finally
You ruined my moment.
You ruined my tongue kiss, Dad. Sophia, who are you sucking face with?
Oh man, it's so sweet. My first no tongue kiss and my first French kiss were with the same person.
No, are you serious?
Yeah, my high school sweetheart until the end of my junior year in high school was my best friend from summer camp since I was 9.
Oh my God.
Like the sweetest little bunny, just the best person, the best person. And I feel like on the one hand, so lucky. Yeah. And on the other hand, I'm like, you were so nice that you made me so naive in the world. God damn it. Yeah. Like, I just had no idea. But yeah, I don't know. It was just like so lovely. It was a sweet way to kind of grow up and like fall in love and have it last for so long. And I remember when we were just like, we'd been together for so long and we'd never experienced anything else. And and I mean,
did
the
you
poor
talk
guy,
about getting, did you think you were going to get married in high school?
Oh, for sure. I was like, I was the Haley James. I was like, this is it. And I also think back and I'm like, that sweet teenage boy who never pressured me into having sex with him, who just was like, it's okay that you're not ready. Like, literally for years, for almost a decade. My God, when you consider the fact that we like fell in love and held hands at summer camp at 9, you know, we broke up when we were 16. And I remember just being devastated. I remember laying on the floor, like the cold tile floor of the bathroom, just sobbing.
Oh, no.
Because I was like, I can't, I don't know how this has happened. And I know it's right, but what's going on? And I went to school and I had told my best friend. And when I like walked into school, she came to meet me and we walked in and everyone was like, oh my God, what happened? Because I think I looked really sad. And she said, she looked at two of the girls we were friends with and she goes, the couple of the century just broke up. And they said, we heard about Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. And they were like, no, you ding-dongs. Or it was Brad and Gwyneth back then, actually. What am I saying?
Oh, it was. Right,
yeah.
Right.
And we were all so sad because they were like so emo and hot and they had the same haircut.
The same haircut.
And and she was like, no. Soph. And everyone was like, no. We were like the teenage love story. It was so sweet.
Aw. Speaking of sweetness, let's talk about Brian Greenberg.
The sweetest.
He was such a good energy too.
He really was.
We got robbed when he went and did his other show. We like
an HBO show.
We were like, fine. I feel like we'd all have had a much... I just feel like things would have been better if he'd stayed. I might be giving my cards away here. All of our cards, really.
Listen, Sophia and I... So at the
we
time...
We were all so in love with him.
We really were.
Yeah.
Joy, you were hanging out with Chef. You were like on the Chef train. And Sophia and I over at the Riverview Suites. I remember riding down in the elevator of the Riverview Suites with you. And I was in a relationship. So I could not say, I think Greenberg is cute. But I was like, he's so fun. And he's just, he's really cool, you know? And you were like, Yeah.
Well, you and I were like little girls just being like, oh my God, he's so cute. Oh my God. Like when you're so young that you get excited that someone else thinks the person you think is cute because it's just so exciting
to
share a secret.
It's a validation.
Yeah.
And he had that damn guitar everywhere.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
Ugh.
Yeah, he was a babe. And by the way, like stayed a babe. Like he's still the nicest dude on the planet.
The best.
I love how much he loves his wife. Like he is... the guy that he was then. Like there was nothing false about him.
That's what I loved about him as an actor too, is when you watch him on screen, there's nothing fake. He can't be anything other than just real in that way, you know.
He's genuine.
Yeah.
When he takes that bag,
when he takes Nathan's bag
just my heart, cuz it's such a shitty thing Dan does to Lucas. Going, hey, son. And then it's, you know, his son, another double entendre. And you see the heartbreak on Chad's face playing Lucas in that scene. And you're just like, it knocks the wind out of you. And then Brian comes in. Don't let him take it. And just takes the bag and puts it over his shoulder. Oh,
hold on, though.
So
I love how we refer to most of the actors by their character's name. But with Greenberg, we're like, but Brian. Like, he did it for real. Like, it was really his choice. Brian's a hero.
Brian
we
did
love
it.
Brian. I was told, you know, in like season two, that Peyton and Jake were endgame. And I was like, oh,
really?
And I think they just said that to throw me off the trail. Do you know what I mean? Mm.
This is a good place for us to talk about this because we all got told lots of things that weren't the same. And I was told, by the way, from day one that Peyton and Lucas were endgame. Like, I signed up for a pilot in which Peyton was not willing to admit that she, like, loved the, you know, the emo boy.
Yeah.
And so you got told Peyton and Jake were endgame.
But
Joy,
I think
they
did that because they wanted me to not lean into the chat of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was a mind game.
Oh, heaven forbid they just tell us what our jobs are as actors because we're professionals. It's like, why did they want us to, like, be weirdly invested in things behind the scenes? Joy, did you always know it was going to be Haley and Nathan, or did you think it was going to be something or someone else?
No, I was surprised. I thought it was going to be Haley and Lucas for a little bit, but then our energy was so sibling-ness that there was just no, that didn't happen. So I don't know. I'm trying to remember. I think it was, I'll be interested to see when this happens, because I think it's later on in season one when Haley starts tutoring Nathan. And I think that was originally just supposed to be an extra conflict of interest with Lucas. Like, Lucas's best friend has to work with Nathan. But James and I, you know, who knew, we had chemistry and on screen. And as soon as we started, you know, getting on together, it was like, people started liking it, and there were message boards back then. And I don't know. It'd be nice to talk with some of the writers on our show who were there at the beginning.
I was told after the pilot. I was told after the pilot that Nathan and Haley were going to be like,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, that was part of the reason they recast, because they were like, no, we need Nathan and Haley. Like, she is going to fix him. And I was like, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I mean, they told me, and that's why they were like, you know, we need someone who is sexy. So, but like, doesn't act like it, you know? So that Nathan gets drawn in by this understated thing. And so
all of my codependent issues really worked for me in this storyline. I was here to save him.
Yeah, oh,
like
every good
high school girl with codependent issues.
Guys, we cannot bring home the fixer-uppers. Like, for any teenage girl listening right now, don't bring home the baggage. Just leave it at school.
And anyone who tells you make me want to be better. No. Run for the hills. I remember my dad using a metaphor that he thought I would understand, because my parents literally... In college, I rescued so many dogs, and I would always bring them to my parents' house for a night before I could figure out where to take them.
This is a metaphor for the relationships.
It is. It'll get there. It'll come back around. My dad was like, if you bring home one more stray dog into this house where we already have dogs, I will literally change the locks and never let you back in. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I guess six was too many, but okay, fine. And years later, you know, fast forward, I don't know, we're in our like mid-20s, and my dad just said, no more sick puppies. Rescue dogs, not people. And I just remember being like, and just sobbing, because I didn't understand that the sort of, I don't know, that desire or that subconscious thing, basically, Joy, what I'm saying is I also have codependency issues, and I'm glad we share that. And I didn't know that was bleeding into spaces where it could be, you know, detrimental to me. And so, baggage at school, puppies at the shelter, just keep on moving.
There's healthy out there, kids. Yeah. There's
there
healthy
really
out
is.
There, I promise. Can we talk about Dan?
Oh, yeah.
Because this really was like a Dan-centric episode, manipulating all the kids. But it's so weird to see how young all the parents are in the show.
And as a parent now, it is interesting to watch those storylines, which we noted earlier that it was Well, I'm recognizing for the first time why one of the reasons why our show is so popular among such a broad age range, because you could watch it with your kids in high school or, you know, whatever. I don't know what age is appropriate for this show, but at the time you would watch it with your young adults, and then the grownups would watch it as well because they had storylines that they were interested in. And I think it's really cool. I'm liking watching the parent storyline now. I didn't really care much when I was 20.
Well, when Dan tells Nathan, you know, Nathan says, "Oh, he's hitting on my girlfriend right in front of me." And Dan says, "You know, if you're going to get in a fight over something important." I remember feeling so slighted as a young person. Mm-hmm. But now as an adult, like if my son came home and was like, "I got in a fight over a girl," I'd be like, "You big idiot. Like, what are you doing?" And so to find myself as a grown-up siding with Dan Scott, like, what have I become?
That's crazy.
Yeah, and Karen, watching Karen, you know, not go to the game and wrestle with, like, I want to support my son, but I just can't go be, that must have been hard. I'll be curious to know what Moira has to say about that, because that's a hard choice to justify, like, to not be able to get past your own issues with the, you know, for her, for Karen not to be able to get past her issues with Dan and Nathan in order to not show up.
Have you gone back to your high schools in real life?
Yes.
When'd you go?
7 years ago probably. Just walked through the halls.
I went back for a fundraiser, but I don't even remember when. It's gotta be at least that long.
It's just so weird because we have these like fake high school memories and like the sets that we walked through as many times as we walked through our real high school halls, you know? Mm. And so to go back to like the real space, that scene with Karen being like, you know, what did she say? That place knows too much.
I can't go back there. What is it?
That place knows
that place
too much.
Too much.
I got chills when she said that.
Yeah.
That's how I feel too. When I go home.
I think we all have places that feel like that. And I think in a way, isn't it interesting that our show has carried that energy for us in a sense until we've been like, no, wait, this is ours. And we made it. And it was awesome. Yeah. And we're taking it back. Yeah. You know, it's a big thing. And Joy, to your point, when you asked, like, I wonder how Moira did that. I think our experience in Wilmington actually being so isolated on our show, because it was like, it was all college kids and retired people mostly. Like, It really was. Like, we just had each other. It was very insular. It was very small. And so I think at times when we were figuring ourselves out, it could make failure feel so much bigger. And I don't know. I would almost wager that maybe for her, it was every single person who's in that gym tonight has a story about me. Mm. Like, there's no anonymity in a town like Tree Hill. That was kind of part of the point, was how in everybody else was. So yeah. I don't know. I'd be curious to know that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
This was also the episode where we got to hear the theme song for the first time.
Yeah, we had our opening credits.
Yes.
I don't want to be anything other than what I've been trying to be.
Every time that song comes on and I like walk into a restaurant or whatever, I'm like, do I hide or am I like proud of it? Do I like walk around? Like, I secretly hope somebody's going to know.
Do you feel like you're being punked? I find out. It used to be that, like, in supermarkets or in restaurants, it was on a loop. So you knew that, like, no one, it was just like a block of music that played over and over again. Yeah. Now, with the way, like, Spotify or, like, technology works, I feel like I'm being punked because it's everywhere.
I'm like, are we being followed? Are they tracking our phones? Does someone think this is funny? Like, they're what, like, is that?
They're like, it could be her or it could not be her, but this is how we're going to find out. And then they hit And then if you get weird, if you get socially awkward, it's her. It's her. It's totally her.
Oh, God. I do love that song. I still love it. I think it's such a good song. That whole album is really strong. Gavin DeGraw. Mm. What's the album? It's Chariot, right? The album is called Chariot. And the song at the end of the episode was a Gavin DeGrasse song also called Belief, yep. which is a super powerful song. He's such an amazing songwriter.
Do you remember partying with him at Firebelly? When did he come visit? Was it the Sheryl Crow episode?
Yeah, the Sheryl Crow episode, he came back to visit. He was there a few times. He came back in the end, too.
Yeah, he was in and out.
Yeah.
He played like our kickoff party, I think. Like when we premiered, he came to Wilmington and like played at a bar or something. But I just remember like being around a pool table with Gavin DeGraw being like, wow, he's really famous. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's so cool that he sang our song.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
He's fun time too. He's a great guy.
Did you tour with him?
Yeah. Yep. I went on tour with him and Michelle Branch. And yeah, he's just like, he's got that swagger. He's got that like, you know, deep artistic soulful heart, but has also like got a, he's a great time. He'll just, you know, shoot the shit with anybody. He'll have a conversation with anybody from anywhere. He's a curious person. And I just think he's a super cool guy.
That's so cool.
We stayed in touch on and off. And yeah, he's a good guy.
Has he ever come to one of the conventions?
No, but he should. They totally should bring him out.
Gavin, if you're listening,
Gavin,
don't be a dork. Come hang out with us. It's so fun. We're a great time.
We just bring him on this show is what we need to do. I had one of my coolest moments with Gavin. When he opened for Billy, this is years later, this is after the show has ended, he opened for Billy Joel on Billy Joel tour.
And
say what?
Anybody that knows me knows what a freak I am about Billy Joel. Like, I know every song. I know every word to every song. He's my favorite. So I went to the Billy Joel concert and he was opening. And I texted him, but, you know, I didn't hear. I was like, you know, he's getting ready to do a show. He's not going to respond. So I was sitting in the front and Gavin does his song and he starts doing our theme song and he's like walking down around the audience and it's at the Hollywood Bowl. So you can come down the side of the stage and come around the middle and up the middle. And as he comes around up the middle, he's got security around him. And I was like, fuck it. And I just like, I told my friend who I was with, I was like, I'll be right back. And I just ran out into the aisle and like rushed him like a crazy fan and like got right up in his face. Like, and I was like, I was like, either he's going to see me and he's going to let me sing this with him or he's going to be totally freaked out and like the security's going to take me away, but I'm going to like take the risk anyway. I'm at a Billy Joel concert. I have to do it.
Oh my
so
God.
I ran up and he definitely was like, and then his face switched when he saw me and recognized me and was like, oh my God. And then like brought me in and we sang on the mic together for a second.
Oh.
And then like, it was so great. And then he went up, they put us up on the big Tron or whatever the big screen is. We were there singing together. So I sang at a Billy Joel concert technically.
That is cool.
Yes.
A street cred joy.
It was pretty cool. He texted me afterwards. He was like, I have a cold. You might want to take some vitamin C when you get home.
Oh no. Also, sorry, though, I just love your boldness. You're like, I'm going. To rush the performer, Joy, you're iconic.
Yeah, I would have been too scared. Like, what if TMZ had been there to catch me getting, like, you know, clotheslined by security? Who's the broad, you know?
Life is short.
Oh, man.
I like that you went for it. Speaking of going for it, this whole, like, patent art thing, people all the time want to know who drew those pictures. Like, I'm just going to say, it wasn't me. We had like trained professionals that did all the artwork. And so all the stuff that you see, maybe our awesome producer can pull up her name.
Yeah, it'd be nice to know the name of the person that did all that.
I don't know if it was the same person all seasons.
Oh, really?
But we had such a great art department. You know, some of the artwork, though, that was taped up to the wall that Peyton tears down was stuff that I'd drawn during the pilot. And then they just like ripped it out of the notebooks that they'd given me and taped it up because it was like, we got to cover some wall space. So all of my real art is the trash art guy.
And it was drawn by, it's on there, Hillary in the chat. They just
Helen Ward. Did Helen do all seasons? I mean, it's iconic. People make, you know, those canvases that they want us to sign at conventions.
I hope she's making money off of that.
I do too. Where's her little coffee table book? Peyton pictures. Sad stuff.
Your art matters.
Your it's art what matters.
Got me. You know what's so weird is that when the show started, it was like art. But I'd come from MTV and I'm like not an arty lady, but I did have like the music thing going. And so the transition from art to music for Peyton, it was one of those things where it was like, art imitating life, you know? Mm-hmm. And Sophia, you just talked about this. Like, your character had to turn into Sophia a little bit more in order for it to fit right. Joy, did you feel, I mean, they added you becoming a musician because you were such a skilled musician in real life. You know.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I think that I did love that about the show, that there was a heavy bent on artistic prowess being, whether it was writers or people who were reading, you know, great literature mm-hmm. or art, great music. I mean, those are cornerstones of our show that, again, something that is a little harder to find now in this genre. And I just love that. And yes, I think, you know, it was just total providence, coincidence, whatever you want to call it, that I was able to be cast on a show that had that one of music as a major cornerstone. And that, mm-hmm. you know, I never came on the show thinking I was going to play a musician ever. And I don't think anyone planned that. Mark heard me singing to myself in a parking lot and just decided to, he was like, hey, do you want to sing on the show? I was like, I don't know. Do I? Maybe. I don't know. I really didn't know because it was so much I was uncertain about at the time. But yeah, I'm really glad that I did. It was super cool. Opened up a lot of doors for me. It was cool.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point, the idea that we got to talk about music and writing and really elevate their sort of pathways into feeling and human experience and catharsis, those are things that a lot of people weren't getting. And we were all talking during the episode about how interesting it was, like, even in that scene with Lucas and Karen in the cafe, when he's so mad and she's yelling at him because he got in a fight with Nathan at school, and he's being a boy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's expressing anger and frustration, and to see that in that character, and then on the flip side to have Nathan's character being a little boy who's been pressured to behave like a man, and like the wrong kind of man, you know, a petty, narcissistic man. It was so incredible to kind of have these men on this seesaw of feeling. It gave all these people permission, and we obviously as the girls got to do so much of our own, you know, I was going to say legwork, and then I'm like, I guess it's heart work, like emotional stuff. But I think that's part of why it's really lived for a lot of people still, is because they, no matter what end of the spectrum you come in on, you feel represented in some way. And I would like to think you feel permission to, like, feel your feelings and your own complexities and things.
Well, did boys cry on TV? See, I was never watching teen dramas, so the only boy I ever, like, cried on TV was Dawson. Because I see that meme of James Vanderbeek.
I know.
It's like a meme.
It is a meme.
But did boys cry on TV back then?
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure there was.
I don't really know.
I feel like there was an episode of Luke Perry crying on 90210 at some point.
Chad was really, really good
about
being vulnerable as a boy, you know, and not having to play that toxic masculinity thing of like, I don't feel anything. I'm dead inside, you know?
Yeah.
He went for it.
And I think that's such an interesting thing too, you know, that they wanted him to play Nathan, and he wanted to do something different than he'd been doing for his career.
Yeah.
And you know, isn't it so funny that then, and we've talked about this before, but like, you had sweet little baby James come in to play Nathan. He's such a sensitive soul, and then had to come in and be bad.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know. It's just so, it's so interesting, all the things that we all were able to try and the ways we had to push ourselves to be these people.
Have you guys ever seen James's audition tape? Because, like, I know how James enters a room and it's like, hey, it's nice to see you. Cool, cool. You know, and it's like so chill. And then when they just start the scene, like, I can't imagine that, like, turn in the audition where it's like, oh no, I'm evil, you know.
It's so wild. I also, it's striking me in this moment because, you know, Hillary, you were talking about how, like even in your scenes, like when Peyton and Lucas would be doing these emotional scenes, like Chad would always, you know, meet you there.
Yeah.
And then Joy, I remember asking you something when we were working early, early years. And I was like, how do you do that though? Like what's the mechanism to cry like that? Like I have to get so sad. And you just looked at me and you were like, well, you know, I just kind of, and you did this like thing. You went somewhere in your head and you looked to the side and then you were crying. And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? It was like the most magical thing I'd ever seen. And in this moment, it's hitting me that, you know, you guys, you and Chad really came in having had the most experience on sets. And like me, Hillary and James didn't know anything. And so
I'm
like,
puppet.
Yeah, man. But it's cool because I realized that in this moment, I'm like, oh, right. You guys had like these amazing performer skill sets that, oh, I remember watching you do things and just being like, wow.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of opportunities to do that. And you got a lot more opportunities to do all that too. So, I mean, I think Brooke took such
you
a
built
cool,
it for yourself.
Yeah, you really did. And I'm so Thanks. Excited for us to see more of that. The next episode is the famous one of you in the backseat of the car.
Oh,
I'm pretty
man.
Sure that's the next one. But, you know, we get to know a little bit more about Brooke.
So to all our friends at home, we heard you all really liked our most likely to's last week. And so the three of us did a little digging on the internet and we dug up some pretty excellent most likely to's.
I'm so excited about
these. They're so ridiculous. We would like, if you guys continue to find this fun, to pick one every week and decide who we want to attribute it to.
What is the one for this week? All right, are we pulling it? Is there a drum roll?
Let's pull it.
Go.
Okay, who is most likely to go on The Bachelor?
Not that we've seen her yet, but the moment I saw that come out of the hat, my first thought was Deb.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
She's like, I deserve a second chapter. I've been dealing with Dan Scott for decades. Yeah. I'm going to say probably Rachel.
Oh my God. It's totally
Rachel. Do you know
what I mean?
Like Danielle hasn't appeared yet, but Rachel did Maxim. I mean, she did all sorts of weird stuff. And then after I left, didn't she end up doing like a TV show with Dan Scott or something weird?
Oh yeah. She ended up, well, do we give away the spoiler?
I heard a rumor that they ended up together. Like she's totally the person to end up on The Bachelor.
Yeah. She ended up with the rich guy on a private jet. You're right. It's Rachel.
God bless.
I love her.
Okay, you guys are flooding our inbox. We love it so much. It's so cool to hear from all of you. Okay, so we have some listener questions. Are you girls ready for this?
Ooh, I don't know. How invasive are they?
I'm not feeling witty today. I'm sorry. I was going to say something about my last gynecology appointment, but that would be totally inappropriate. Okay. Simon was wondering what your first impressions of each other were, which we talked about a little bit, and whether they still remain the same now. And do you think filming on location in particular made you all much closer?
Ooh.
Well, I still think Sophia's beautiful, and I was blown away to find out that she was so incredibly brilliant as well. Like what an amazing double hitter. What do they call it? God really doled out with both hands on you, kiddo.
She's a winner. Listen, I remember realizing how smart Sophia was when we started doing crew Christmas presents and we would get the entire crew Best Buy gift certificates. And Sophia was the person that was like, you guys are stressing me out. I'm going to handle this. And yes. She would go to Best Buy, buy like 1,000 gift certificates and then have the lists of names and figure out who got what and like, be in her trailer just managing that. And it was a big task.
All the math.
And girlfriend, you got the money. She got all the money from everybody.
Yeah, she organized.
She's boss.
Yes.
And that was pre-Venmo.
Yeah. And Hillary, I still think you're also beautiful and so cool and so soulful and smart. And I mean, yes, my first impressions of both of you stuck and have deepened for sure.
100%. Hillary, you're like wickedly, intimidatingly cool, and so yourself. And actually something you share, I was just about to pivot to you, Joy, but I realized one of the things that like I love the most about you both, and that also makes me feel intimidated because I feel like I don't know anything, is you have such a deep well of like expert level musical theater knowledge. So sometimes when the three of us are together, but when the three of us are together, one of you says something and then you go off on a tangent and I'm like, where are they going? What are they talking about? What is this?
It's usually straight to Jean Valjean.
Yeah. It's Les Mis or Into the Woods. It's one of the two.
Yeah.
Always.
My first impression of Joy, and this is something that continues to ring true, is Joy is the all-American girl next door. She is wholesome and like so easy to love right out of the gates. Mm. But Joy has a naughty streak that I always felt so privileged to know about. And so just recently we have a mutual friend and we were talking about Joy and she's like, you know, Joy's just so wholesome and so good. And I'm like, what Joy are you hanging out with? Because I know Party Joy, and she is fun.
When Joy
lets you into that cut loose circle, you've made it. That's the upper echelon.
It feels real nice because it's true. You're so beautiful and talented, and you sing like an angel. And I think because you were playing, Haley, we all were like, aw. And then
Wicked.
You get into like the whiskey nights and you're just like, oh, I've made
That's
it.
Right.
I've made it.
Give me a glass of Johnny Walker and a nice long Virginia Slim and I'll have a real good night.
Oh,
have a good chat.
There it is.
Bad Girls Club. Here we come. Bad Girls. All right. What's our next question?
Oh, Hillary, this one's for you. Stacy says, Hillary, in the pilot episode, did you actually almost run over Chad with the comet?
Oh, Christ. I mean.
Didn't you?
So here's what's up. I hadn't really driven a car since high school because I lived in Manhattan. Like, why would I drive a car? And so I came down. I don't know that my license was even good. And they give me this car that is, you know, it's a vintage car. Brakes aren't awesome. It shifts in and out of gear on its own. And they're just like, okay, honey, what you need to do is pick up a little speed and then like hit the brakes and hit this mark exactly because he's just going to be standing here. And guys, I couldn't even hit a mark walking. Like, how am I going to? Chad's quick. He's limber. He survived. What do you want me to do? Yeah. Okay, great. So those are our listener questions. Will you guys please keep sending them to us?
Yes.
You know, because
yes.
It's fun to figure out what you want to talk about. We know what we want to talk about.
We could just go on and on forever.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about Joy and her secret talent?
Ooh.
This is truly one of the greatest things. And especially, you know, a year into not being able to not only be together because we don't live in the same place as all of us, but no one can be together because of this pandemic. And then it was finally safe for us to do this and we got to do our shoot. And I mean, listen, we may or may not have taken all those bottles of Jane Walker home from the bar with us.
We did. Spoiler.
But
we did.
In my defense, I did bring them for us.
Yeah.
I brought them as presents and then we opened them all.
We weren't going
to
leave them.
Joy's Ranch. No. Who would ever waste a great bottle of whiskey? We took them to Joy's Ranch and we were like out with the horses and the dogs. And then we turn around and this goddess woman with her mermaid hair is mixing the stiffest drinks that were just so good.
Well, the rose petals are what got me. Joy goes out into her garden and it's just like plucking rose petals to put in drinks. And like, is she a fairy? What is this? It was glorious.
Yeah, you made us this like floral version of an old fashioned. I mean, it's what inspired the cocktails that we literally made with Jane Walker. We got to make boxes of them because of you.
It was so cool. So I love mixology. It's something that I kind of started over the pandemic. And it's to me, it's kind of like the closest I know how to get to potion making. There's like all these pretty bottles and you can pour stuff out and mix things and they taste good and they make you feel certain ways and it's very exciting. So yeah, it's become a bit of a hobby. And yeah, that was one of my favorites. I really love, there's a rose syrup. It's not a syrup, it's a liqueur. It's rose liqueur. And when you mix it into kind of like an old fashioned style drink with whiskey, it's particularly great. So yeah, we'll have to post that recipe as well as our smoky Lapsang Souchong
smoky syrup tea infused cocktail that we got to make with Jane Walker, and it's called the Iconic. So pass the word around. That's the Iconic Drama Queen, and we'll post those recipes soon.
But yeah, that was fun, and I'm so glad that you girls came over, because it was really, we haven't been able to really do that just all together.
No, we were supposed to come to your house just for dinner, and Soph and I didn't leave till like 1 o'clock in the morning. It was like, oh, like I hope we get a car out here, and we did. But yeah, it was an adventure. I love it out there, just sitting out on your patio and like seeing the horses and all the stars and being able to catch up. That's like the first time we've gotten to hang out in somebody's backyard since we were in Wilmington.
Oh my gosh, that's right. That's so true.
Yeah, because so much of what we've all been able to do, you know, over the last half decade has been in cities around the world. Like we'll go to Montreal, we'll go to Paris. We haven't been able to just sit at home. And it felt so nice.
So how should we wrap up, guys? Should we talk
we need to talk about what our favorite lines of the episode are, for sure.
Okay. Oh, well, yeah. I don't think there's any, I mean, I guess, well, Your Art Matters is like, that's the one. That's like the star line.
Yeah.
It's tattooed on my heart. Like not in real life, guys. Like I don't really have it tattooed, but I feel like that's the heart of Peyton. Like that line. Yes. Everything comes back to that.
Yeah.
And it's Your Art Matters is that iconic line, but it's the support line. It's what got me here. Like that's the whole thing of it. You did something and it made me brave.
It did matter. It's after you gave him that whole speech, the whole grown-up speech at the car. And what does it matter? It doesn't matter to anybody anyway. And that he took the risk to say that to you in spite of how often you reject him.
Boys should always talk to us that way.
Yes.
Just always.
Tell us what we want to hear. Thank you very much.
And I got to say, the sleeper hit for me was definitely That Place Knows Too Much. Ooh, that was a punch in the gut.
Yeah. That's the grown-up line that hits us now as grown-ups, where it's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Girls, this has been so fun. I can't wait till our next one.
I love you.
Love you too.
I'm so dirty from farming today. So I love that this is our lady break, like where we get to just like pause and be 17-year-old girls again and have a great time. All right, guys, saddle up. We'll see you next week. As always, we're your drama queens. We love you.
Bye.
Love you.
We're all about that high school drama girl, all about them high school queens.
Forever.
We'll take you for a ride in our comic girl, drama girl. Cheering for the right team. Drama queens, drama queens. Smart girl, rough girl, fashion, but you're tough girl. You could sit with us, girl.
Drama queens, drama queens, drama queens. Drama, drama queens, drama queens.